KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
We will not be taking calls during today's program.
A safe, stable, and supportive home is important for helping young people start life off on solid emotional ground. But sudden tragedies, accidents, illness, and dysfunction can lead to children needing foster care. It can be hard to find nurturing adults to provide care, especially for kids who need intensive therapeutic care. A new campaign seeks to raise awareness and recruit new foster care families. We'll learn more today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. Are you involved in subsistence hunting, fishing, and trapping? The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking young leaders to fill non-voting seats on the Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Interested Alaska residents ages 18 to 25 are to submit a letter of interest, including two references, by Sunday, February 16, 2025. More information at 907-444-1376. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Thanks for listening today. We love being a part of your media mix. Tune in every day to catch the best in statewide news and programming. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
From Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Caring for children is one of society's most important roles. And understanding that it takes more than just parents to nurture and support kids, even in the best of settings, helps drive home how critical it is to have compassionate adults ready to stand in and care for vulnerable youth when their biological parents cannot. It's not easy for the kids or the foster parents to adjust to someone new coming into their home, and for children who have experienced a lot of trauma, it's harder. The pandemic put pressure on an already burdened system, but our guests today are dedicated to finding solutions to license more foster homes and help more kids in need. Kim Swisher is the Deputy Director for the State Office of Children's Services. Dan Bigley is the CEO of Denali Family Services. And Nathan Dieter is the Licensing Supervisor for Alaska Child and Family. Welcome, all of you. Thanks so much for being here in person.
Good morning.
Thank you.
It's great to have guests in studio. You can also join our discussion, Alaskans. Are you a foster parent, or are you interested in opening your home to children in need? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Kim, I want to start with you. Let's start with the current setting for the number of foster homes against the need. First, for general foster care, and then we'll discuss therapeutic care. What is that picture today, Kim?
Yeah, we have a little over 900 licensed foster families here in Alaska. We have about a little over 2,400 kids in care. And, you know, our licensed foster homes for the general population can have anywhere from 1 to 6 young people in them. So the number of homes is a little misleading because they could have multiple children, hopefully sibling groups. But when it comes to therapeutic treatment foster homes, we have about 180. And so, you know, the need right now to meet the individualized needs of each child that comes into care is pretty great. We need to have a variety of settings to be able to meet those needs of children instead of placing them with what's available and hoping that it's going to work. So having a broad, amount of homes that can meet individualized child's needs is really what we're shooting for, so that those placements are more stable.
How did the pandemic affect affect foster care, both in terms of families and also need for kids?
You know, the pandemic really was challenging for all of us. We all had to adapt, morph, change our entire lifestyle, right? And when you think about having children in your home or individuals in your home that weren't a part of your biological family, it was very challenging for foster families to continue to open their home to youth in need. When we're in survival mode, right, which many of us were during the pandemic, you really had to kind of decrease your bubble. You had to be thoughtful about who you're bringing into your home. So we did see a number of foster homes close their licenses during that time, or once the children, you know, achieved permanency, then they didn't decide to take in more children. So we've seen a decrease in licensed foster homes since then. We have seen an uptick in applications coming in, though, in the last few years that we've been recovering from the pandemic, and that's a wonderful thing. But we still have, you know, hundreds of less homes available than we did at the height of the pandemic. One of the things that is a positive from our point of view is that we do have less children in foster care, though, than we did back in, let's say, 2017, by about 1,000, maybe a little more than 1,000. And so we've seen less kids in care, but we still don't have enough licensed homes to meet that need, especially when we're looking at crafting a very specific setting to meet the specific needs of individualized youth. Because young people are coming to us with a variety of different needs these days. The pandemic was hard on all people's mental health. For young people that have experienced adverse childhood experiences, the pandemic, you know, was another crippling effect. Yes. And so we've seen an increase in behavioral health needs for the youth coming into care. It's more complex.
You mentioned a decline of 1,000 young people in foster care, which is fantastic. But what do you attribute that to? Was there changes in how you're working with biological families, or what happened that you're seeing fewer?
You know, we saw a decrease in the number of calls that came in during the pandemic to our agency. That number has started to increase. We are working really closely with our tribal communities to prevent children from coming into care. And so I think we're trying to be really thoughtful about, does a child really need to come into care? Can that child be served in their biological home, with their biological parents, with community wrapped around them, especially in our tribal communities, really ensuring that they remain in their tribal community, their village, with their tribal people. So I think we're just trying to be really thoughtful.
All right. Thank you for getting us started, Kim. Dan, I want to turn to you now. Dinelli Family Services is coming up on 30 years service to Alaskans. That's so outstanding. How has the need changed in those decades?
Yeah, I think, you know, the need has always been there. Like, as we started providing therapeutic foster care in 97, and we have yet to know a day to where we have enough therapeutic foster homes to meet the needs of youth in Alaska. But I think really what's changed is our understanding about how best to meet the needs of the youth that we are serving and the families we are serving. You know, we've probably heard a lot about, you know, trauma-informed care and kind of what does that mean? And so really just our understanding of how best to work with youth that have experienced a lot of adverse experiences in their life has changed, I'd say, the most remarkably. And how that relates to therapeutic foster care is, you know, we now have therapeutic foster parents that are coming on board. They're getting licensed to be foster parents. They're getting really comprehensive training to become trauma-informed themselves and how they provide care. Because really for a lot of the youth that are coming into services, you know, they really don't have a framework for how to use those relationships to get their needs met. And so our parents are really skilled at kind of understanding the communication behind behavior, and then responding to it in such a way that we can help a youth kind of get out of survival mode and start to internalize a sense of safety, and then learn to navigate those family relationships in such a way that they can get their own needs met.
We really want kids to move from surviving to thriving.
Exactly.
So talk a little more about, Dan, about the services that Dinelli Family Services provides. And how many young people do you see each year?
Yeah, on any given year, we might see as many as 250 youth from all over the state of Alaska. We primarily operate out of the Mat-Su and also here in Anchorage. We have about 55 licensed therapeutic foster homes at this time, which is down from our pre-pandemic high of about 80 licensed homes. And so we essentially sit at the highest level of care. So we're serving youth that experience the greatest level of need that can be safely served in the community. So if a youth exceeds our level of care, you know, they're going to be typically residing in either a residential treatment setting or acute psychiatric hospitalization. So in addition to our therapeutic foster care program, we have a full suite of wraparound services. So we might have a one-on-one support in school, providing behavioral health support to a youth in a community school. We run after-school programs, summer and winter break and spring break programs. We also have case management services that provide in-home family skill development supports and a full range of therapy services. So individual, group, and family therapy, and then, of course, medication management as well for youth that where that's indicated.
Kim talked a little bit about the decline that happened during the pandemic, but and, you know, the good news of a little bit of an uptick now and families signing up again, which is fantastic. The Denali Family Services website states that since 2019, there's been a 43% decrease in available foster homes. This decline started well before the pandemic. What's known about?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not quite sure why this decline started, you know, pre-pandemic. I mean, it's certainly a challenging role for families to serve. But there's no doubt that the pandemic had a big impact. I mean, you know, we always joke, as a former therapist, we always joked with our therapeutic foster parents because it's like we see the youth for 1 hour a week typically, and then they see the youth, you know, the other 23 hours every day type of a thing. But during the pandemic, you know, just like all parents, they also became the school teachers. You know, so all of a sudden they were on 24/7 with real no break in their lives and day. And so I think that it was a big impact. And it was hard for youth to stay contained in those bubbles as well. And so that's another thing we saw, especially with our adolescent youth struggling with that isolation. You saw spikes in depression, anxiety, and that just made the challenges even harder for parents.
Well, and still dealing, so many families still dealing with some of that fallout from the pandemic and the effects of that isolation. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about the need for foster care families and especially for therapeutic foster care families. In the studio with me today is Kim Swisher. Kim is the Deputy Director of the State Office of Children's Services, OCS. Dan Bigley is also here with us today. Dan is the CEO of Denali Family Services. And Nathan Dieter is in the studio. Nathan is the Licensing Supervisor for AK Child and Family. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Nathan, thank you for your patience. Let's get you in here now. You provide behavioral health services. Talk a little about, describe your organization's support for foster families and what you do.
So much like Denali Family Services, we also have therapeutic foster homes, case management services, wraparound services for families as well. We also have residential programs that for those higher level needs that aren't quite like hospital needs, but therapeutic foster care homes are sort of the step down from that residential setting. And so we kind of gradually bring them back into their permanent placements, where whatever they may be, to help them kind of re-enter, you know, normal life, basically.
So you're kind of covering a broad spectrum of in-home, in foster, and also in potentially hospital settings, working with
youth? It's similar. They in our residential facilities, they live sort of like in a kind of a dormitory kind of environment, and then they go to their schools, and then they do the therapy and stuff. And then from there, they come to our therapeutic foster homes, which is the program that I work with. And we have something like 35 homes now to provide those services.
Those are group homes?
No, those are therapeutic foster homes.
I see. Yeah. And for the group setting where people are living in together, do they age out of that at some point, or do some of these folks stay in this group setting further into adulthood?
No, because of the way Medicaid works, they won't let kids stay in any of these settings for very long. So the idea is to help them come back to their permanent placements, like I said earlier. So in our therapeutic foster homes, we'll often have them for maybe up to a year, working on different goals and objectives, then they move on to their permanent placements.
All right, thank you. Kim, you said that there's 900 licensed foster families and 100 therapeutic.
185, actually, yeah.
185 therapeutic homes.
Yeah.
And 2,400 kids in care. Mm-hmm. How many more homes would you like to see come online?
Oh, that is a tough question. What I would love to see is for us to be able to placement match for every youth that needs it, right? So I don't know what that number would be. Of the 2,400 kids that are in care right now, close to 500 of them actually are on trial home visits with their parents. So not all of them are needing a foster care placement. But I think what we're looking for, especially with this campaign, is the ability to creatively meet the needs of youth when they need it, right? To have a plethora of homes available in that spectrum of care, because our agency is tasked with ensuring that children are in the least intrusive, least restrictive placement, meaning the most family-like setting possible. And sometimes the needs of these youth is acute hospitalization for crisis stabilization or residential treatment. But we want to get them back to a family-like setting. And so in the spectrum of care, therapeutic treatment, foster care is really in that spectrum designed to provide that stability, that support, to work on those behavioral health goals, to develop coping mechanisms and skill development, with the goal, like Nathan said, to get them back to their permanent placement. So that may be back with mom, dad, it may be back with grandparents, whomever their family of origin is. And it may also be with a guardian relative placement or an adoptive home. And so the goal is to get down in that least restrictive, least intrusive spectrum of services to get them back to kind of normal family life.
Of the 2,400 young people in state care custody, as you said, about half go to relatives, the other half need out of family foster care. About half of these families do not reunify with their families. Is that more or less than in past decades, or is that sort of what ends up happening?
You know, that just has sort of been the norm for Alaska, and actually across the nation, we're right in the norm with the nation, too. So, I think our goal ultimately is to get young people with relatives first. But when you think about some of the complexity that young people come with, our relatives need additional support and training and resources, too, for us to be able to keep youth in the most family-like setting. And so I think one of the nice things about becoming a therapeutic treatment home is that it is really available for anyone who might be interested. And same with foster care. So we do spend a great deal of time trying to support relatives in becoming licensed. We have a variety of different support mechanisms for that. Because ultimately, when young people are no longer in state care, they are going to reconnect with family. They are likely going to reestablish those connections with mom and dad, with their family of origin. And we want to provide them with as many skills as possible to be able to navigate that.
Yeah.
And navigate it well. Yeah.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. If you'd like to join our conversation today about the need for foster families and how you can become a foster family or a therapeutic foster family, 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can email talk@alaskapublic.org. Dan, you said you could double the amount of licensed homes and it still wouldn't be enough. What efforts are underway to recruit, and what should people know about going through this process?
Yeah, I mean, we do everything we can to get ourselves out in the community, engage with the community, help them learn about our mission and the needs that Alaskan families and youth are experiencing. So, you know, you might see us at 4th of July parades or state fair or, you know, any of those types of public events. But, you know, most currently, we're really excited about this current campaign that we're talking about today called Foster Care is Love. And so it was with the generous support of the Office of Children's Services, and we received a grant from the municipality of Anchorage. And so definitely a lot of thanks for the assembly that helped to get that approved for us as well. And, you know, so the Foster Care is Love campaign, you can learn more about it at fostercarealaska.org. And there you can learn all about the benefits of becoming a therapeutic foster parent and kind of some of the additional supports and benefits you'll receive, you know, from being a therapeutic foster parent. But, you know, to me, as we talk about, you know, the need, I think it's just so important too to reflect on the reward of the outcomes that we see for young people that really are matched with a good home. They experience a positive connection, positive relationship, and that becomes sort of the context for growth for these youth. Because when you imagine youth, you know, oftentimes arriving in that sort of survival state, and you watch them internalize a sense of safety, watch them start to form some real meaningful attachments and relationships. It's really just so rewarding and remarkable when you see them, you know, start to engage in school differently when they're not stuck in survival mode. You see them start to engage in friendships and other relationships in more significant ways, and creative expression sort of starts to come out, and ultimately comes down to just being a kid again, you know, rather than being this focused on survival. So that's kind of where the Foster Care is Love idea comes from. Is like it's a hard work. It can be challenging, but it not only fills the cup for youth and families that need that type of care, but it can certainly fill your cup as well. So just encourage folks to go learn more about it at fostercarealaska.org.
And also it ripples out into the entire community and, you know, state and nation. When people do better, we all do better. So it really helps everyone if young people are feeling secure and less anxious and aren't just in survival mode. They can't function and create a good life in that setting. So it helps everyone if children do well. Nathan, talk a little about the training. The therapeutic foster care families get training and support. Does that go to all family members? Is it just the parents in the household? But do their children get some training? If they have biological children in the house, do the children get training as well to understand this change that's going to be happening in their family?
Oftentimes, the parents are the primary receivers of the training. They have to have a certain number of hours and a certain number of topics covered just to have their license and just to be a foster home with us. But on top of that, we also make sure that they're comfortable with providing the services that they're providing within the homes, because therapeutic foster care is not just three huts and a cot.
Right.
It's dealing with trauma and emotional behaviors and stuff that are really challenging. And it's the things that maybe a neurotypical family do to support their, you know, their youth in their home aren't going to work for the kids that we have in our home, because they have this significant trauma associated with them. Just being in foster care alone mm-hmm. is one of the predictors of that trauma. And so you really have to kind of think critically about how you're parenting and bring them around to this more healing kind of process. And so that goes with the parents, that goes with adults who are able to step in for parents in the home, or even kids.
And I imagine that training has to delve a lot into just what might seem like very basic things like your chores and the discipline in our household, curfews, things like that, especially for young people who either had possibly no kind of guidance at all and were sort of left to their own devices, or had too much that mm-hmm. they were, heavily punished for small infractions. And what type of training helps people understand that even a very small thing, such as saying, well, on Tuesday you have to do the dishes, could result in an over-escalation of anxiety and you're off to the races?
Well, and that's often the case. My own daughter, we fostered her and then adopted her later on out of the system. And so just the smallest things sometimes set her off dramatically. And so we have had to adapt to how we parent her so that we can
de-escalate
by addressing the antecedent before that of that behavior. So that emotion, what caused that anxiety or that that trouble in her brain that flicks that switch. Mm. And so it's very challenging. This is not easy work. And as much as we say foster care is love, that's really just the basic foundation. You have to learn how to love these kids in a different way.
Well, and I don't want to be critical of that campaign because it's so important, but sure. Is it a bit of an oversimplification to just say foster care is love?
Yes, but you have to also think about what love means, and in this case, love is going to be loving the kids where they're at and loving the kids what they need, rather than,
your idea of love.
Yeah. And so that's where the training comes in, where we say here's what it takes to be trauma informed. Here's what it takes to understand this particular, diagnosis. This is what works with kids that have this kind of behavior, and then we support that.
And I don't want to ask too many questions about your personal life, but do you see growth in your daughter's ability to manage those emotions? And do you think that at some point should parents be aware of the fact that it could plateau, like you're only going to get to a certain place?
Absolutely. When we first got her in our home, she was 4 years old. She'd had 8 placements. She was diagnosed with FASD, and eventually a lot of other things came along the way when we got more diagnoses for her. And she was not supposed to be able to read or function in a normal school setting, and because of our therapeutic parenting, we were able to have her rise above all that. And mm-hmm. so, we've been talking about the pandemic. That was tough on her. She has a lot of like really personal connections with people, with teachers, and with her adults, and so not being able to see them or not being able to build those was really, really difficult for her. But her escalations used to last hours, and now they're maybe 15 minutes.
great progress.
We've made a lot of great progress, and we're just super proud of her and everything that she's accomplished. And she's great.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. Thank you for that wonderful personal story. And, I hope that people are listening closely and realize the value. And yes, it's not always going to be easy, but so worth it.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion on the need for foster homes as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Talk one-on-one with experts on mental health, nutrition, pharmacology, surgery, childcare, and much more on Line One, your health connection. Join our hosts as they discuss the health topics that matter to Alaskans with their guests and live callers. Email questions before, during, or after the live broadcast to lineone@alaskapublic.org. That's Line One, your health connection, weekly on your local public radio station.
Today's episode of Talk of Alaska is a rebroadcast of a previous episode. We will not be taking calls during today's program.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the need for foster care families and especially for therapeutic foster care families with Kim Swisher, who is the Deputy Director of the State Office of Children's Services, OCS. Dan Bigley is here. Dan is the CEO of Denali Family Services, and Nathan Deer is with us. Nathan is the Licensing Supervisor for AK Child and Family. You can join our conversation if you have questions about becoming a foster care family. Or maybe you're already providing care and you'd like to share stories of what you've been able to help young people achieve. You can join us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. Excuse me. So we were talking about your experience, Nathan, but for all of you, we've certainly all heard the sad stories of young people being shuffled around. You mentioned your daughter, 4 years old, 8 different homes. That's just crushing to my heart to think of a small child like that being shuffled around so much. But that happens. We hear those stories a lot. Just adding more and more uncertainty and disruption to their lives. Why does this happen? Is it people getting into foster care and not really understanding what they're taking on? Or what? Why do we hear some of the stories of young people that have been in 14, 15, 20 different homes? It's just crushing to consider. And is that getting any better? Kim, what can you tell us?
Well, there are a lot of reasons why placements disrupt. When young people come into care, we don't always have a thorough understanding of everything that they've experienced. Mm. And the safer they are, the more stable they are, the more those things start to come out. They begin to develop. And as we're getting assessments completed, as we're getting evaluations accomplished, we learn more about the needs of this youth. So maybe they started out in a placement or two that wasn't the right fit to meet their need because we didn't know enough about their experience. We find that the longer youth are in foster care, they start to disclose more that's occurred to them in their lifetime. And so they may have some behaviors that end up being not safe, you know, in that particular setting. Maybe they need to be in a setting with older youth. Maybe they don't, you know, they need to be with youth more their age. But it takes a little time to figure that out. So identifying the right placement the first time can be really hard, but we do try to do that based off what we know. We have a few things that we are really trying to reinstitute at the Office of Children's Services to ensure that we're making the right placement decision the first time. We are currently in the process of offering a model known as team decision making. We're trying to get back to our roots where we bring together the entire team, the therapeutic team, if a therapeutic team is involved, and holding these meetings with the family present, the youth present when appropriate, and talking about placement, talking about transition. So we are about to launch statewide just after the new year. We've been retraining all our facilitators to get back to fidelity of that model, which is really a community model to bring more voices to the table to ensure that we get the right placement decision made or we preserve that placement. Maybe the foster family needs more support than they're receiving. That often leads to placement disruptions, and so we're trying to find creative ways to meet that need. We're rebooting a lot of things at OCS since the pandemic because The pandemic cracked open the opportunity to do things at a statewide level, which we didn't really do before. We didn't use technology in that way pre-pandemic. And so we're trying to find creative ways to do that, to bring all the voices to the table. But placements disrupt for a variety of reasons, and my agency certainly struggles with turnover. Everyone knows about that at my agency, and turnover can be a problem too. That continuity for the family contributes to those placement disruptions. So we have a lot of growth there that we're trying to work on. But we really rely on our community partners to help us with this. Our foster families or resource families also receive a lot of support through the Alaska Center for Resource Families, where they can get training and additional support. But placement disruptions happen. I think what needs to happen, though, is that we come at those with love, right? And we try to wrap these young people in as much love as possible to ensure that that minimizes that disruption or that movement. And so that's really what I love about this campaign, because it, you know, foster parents have to lead with empathy, and our agency and other agencies have to lead with empathy, because it's a lot that these families are taking on. And sometimes families just need to say, you know what, I can't right now, and then we have to find a different placement.
Sure.
So
yeah.
we're trying to always meet them where they're at.
Dan, excuse me, Dan, help us. Sometimes young people need hospitalization. Help us understand how children can move from intense settings like that, hospitalization, institutionalization, to a therapeutic home setting. How does that process work?
Yeah, sure. I mean, so part of what makes, what promotes stability in a hospital-like setting is a very routine and rigid structure. And because of that structure, the environment is very predictable. Predictability is internalized in some ways as a sense of safety and a sense of, you know, there being some control in the environment. And so, for a variety of reasons, it does promote stability. However, the challenge with that is that what we see a lot of times is as youth transition from, you know, highly structured settings back into community placements, whether it's with, you know, biological family or foster families or otherwise, is that it's hard to generalize that success that was learned in the structured setting to a community setting that doesn't have the same rigidity and structure. And so part of what therapeutic foster parents are trained to do is to really think about routines and daily rituals in a child's life and being that consistent and predictable caregiver. So that we can really help promote, you know, a predictable environment where youth can learn to be successful within that. And so it's sort of a stepping back down from that higher level of care back into a community setting, but with a lot of structure and support. And then oftentimes, and hopefully, transitioning right back into their permanent setting.
It's one of the reasons why Mr. Rogers was so popular, because he had that calm every time. It was the same. He did the same things. And so there was that reassurance of routine and predictability.
Yep.
With that program. It's really troubling to consider what happens to children in need when there isn't capacity at therapeutic homes. Where do these young people end up? Do they end up back in the hospital?
Yeah, I mean, this is really what drives this need, and I know it's something that the state of Alaska is really looking at. I know it's something that, you know, individual providers are looking at is how do we build capacity, how do we provide the services to meet the needs, because we all have experience and hear the stories, but, you know, for us as providers, you know, firsthand have the experience of, you know, some of the adverse outcomes that can happen for youth if there's not a good match or even any placement available to take these youth. And so for our older youth, it might look like spending some time at in a homeless shelter like the Covenant House. It may look like sleeping on couches at friends' houses. It may look like, you know, spending some time unnecessarily, potentially even in higher levels of care, whether that's residential or hospitalization, just waiting for placements to become available. There's a number of different things that happen when there's not enough resources really to meet the needs.
And Dan, staying with you for a moment, you cited in an earlier interview a Department of Justice report from the early 2000s that said Alaska was out of compliance with the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, due to over-institutionalization of youth. Have things gotten better since that report, or are they worse?
Well, you know, I'm not really in a position to kind of speak to how things have changed since that report was issued, but it really was a call to action for the state and all providers. And, you know, that, of course, is one of the driving drumbeats, if you will, to this Foster Care is Love campaign is, you know, we're committed to meeting the needs within our communities, the needs of youth. And so really it's a call to action to the community, in my opinion. And so for those community members out there that are interested in making the difference in the life of a child, like this is an opportunity because there's youth that need you for sure.
The Foster Care is Love campaign is aimed at, Nathan, and I want to turn to you now, is aimed at getting more Anchorage families signed up, but are efforts also directed at rural communities? And what does recruitment look like across the state? How does that differ?
Well, AKHN family is primarily in Anchorage. And so we have attempted to do some long distance foster care services or therapeutic foster care services, and it's difficult, it's challenging, but it's not impossible. And so I think both of our agencies are looking at different ways to do that. And so if you have a foster home or if you have a home that you can open for therapeutic foster care and are willing to learn, I think we're really willing to talk to you and to help you through that process, to help us serve as many kids as possible in whatever communities are out there.
Mm-hmm. And Dan, you got a grant from a new municipality of Anchorage for the Foster Care is Love campaign. Is this unusual, or do other Alaska communities also offer funding support for helping out in this regard?
You know, that's a great question. We saw the proposal. We knew the need well, and so received a letter of support actually from Kim here with us from the Office of Children's Services, and decided to go for it. And we were very, very thankful for the support of the municipality to launch this. And our hope is that we can really show some success and generate some good data on what was effective in the campaign so that we can create more opportunities for more communities and more providers. I mean, we saw the opportunity in this to actually partner with AK Child and Family. And so we're both kind of, as partners, engaged in this campaign. And like I said, hopefully we're able to show some results so that other providers and other communities can have a model to follow.
Kim, for someone to decide to become foster parents, it's a big step and a big commitment. Are there foster parents in the system now who are kind of like ambassadors that are willing to meet with other adults who are considering becoming foster parents to answer questions for them?
Oh, absolutely. I just met with our Resource Family Advisory Board on Friday, and they're just a lovely group of humans that have been foster parenting for many, many years. The Alaska Center for Resource Families, the team over there can connect anyone interested in foster care with other individuals engaged in foster care to learn about it, to see if it's the right fit for you. Our child placement agencies, though, Denali Family Services, AK Child and Family, and our others across the state who license our therapeutic treatment homes, I know that they would be willing to take calls about this specific process. But there are a variety of people out there that would be happy to talk it through with you and let you know, the pros, the cons, the benefits. I think consistently, though, what we hear is being on the front line of seeing children grow and develop and have their needs met and the progress that they make when they have a stable, loving home is what keeps people in fostering.
All right, we are going to take another short break. Well, it's the same amount of break, but we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on the need for foster care families as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking young leaders involved in subsistence and interested in learning the federal regulatory process to fill non-voting seats on the Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Interested Alaska residents 18 to 25 are to submit a letter of interest, including two references, by Sunday, February 16, 2025. More information at 907-444-1376. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Get your weekly look at the trends, policies, and issues that impact your wallet in Alaska with the Alaska Economic Report. From local businesses to fiscal policy to big industries like fishing, tourism, and oil and gas, I'll cover the high-stakes economic issues that matter to Alaskans all over the state. That's the Alaska Economic Report with me, Ava White, on your local public radio station each week.
Today's episode of Talk of Alaska is a rebroadcast of a previous episode. We will not be taking calls during today's program.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. You can join us. We only have about 15 minutes left in today's program, but if you have a question or comment, you can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422, and you can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. As Burl did, Burl said, first a kudo, a youth in Haines who was in foster care about 11 years ago was the 2023 Haines High valedictorian. So kudos to the foster parents. And Burl also asked a question about how can the need for more foster homes be made public using the Alaska Public Media Network, like daily mentions of recruitment and service needs opportunities. Well, the stations can all decide that on their own, but at least we've got this 1 hour dedicated to that, Burl. So hopefully a lot of folks are listening and will consider becoming foster parents or at least exploring what the options are. Dan, you mentioned during an earlier interview the specific need for ICWA, Indian Child Welfare Act compliant homes. I was talking about this with an Alaska Native friend who has been a foster parent in the past, as have I. She said there are many caring Native homes that would be great for fostering children, but the process, the paperwork, and home checks and requirements for specific supplies, the emergency kit, the fire extinguisher, is kind of daunting and intimidating. When a child goes into foster care, they're assigned a caseworker. Is there any thought about assigning a caseworker for families that want to apply and have someone to help them and say, here's how you do the paperwork, and someone that could bring that those supplies to them so that they're set up and ready? Is there anything like that that sort of helps people? Because I remember for myself, when I went through that process, yeah, it's a lot, and it feels a little intrusive. You know, people got to, of course, they've got to come to your house and check it out, and then they're going to come back to your house and keep checking it out. So what is in place to help people that, you know, might have some, also some cultural concern about the government coming in that goes back a long ways? So how do you think about those things and help Native families and other families make that leap?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And you know, I think there's layers to that question, and probably we could do a whole show, you know what I mean, on some of getting into some of those layers. But I think importantly, you know, I think there's two main things that come to mind. I mean, first of all, it goes back to the need and the needs of the children, the needs of the community. And we can all probably acknowledge, you know, the merits and value of having homes available to place our Alaska Native youth or any Native American child into a home that has that shared cultural context, the belief systems, you know, beliefs about mental health and traditional ways of healing, the cultural activities, just different ways of engaging in life. Because, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, one of the best anecdotes to mental health challenges is, you know, engaging in those things that make life worth living for you know, for any of us. And that might be different for an Alaska Native youth than it would be for youth of other ethnicity. So I think there's real tremendous value in having ICWA compliant homes available. And so, yeah, we've reached out, and we do outreach pretty consistently to Alaska Native partners. And try to make appearances in cultural related events to really help, you know, spread the word about the need and then be that connection. In regards to helping families navigate some of the challenges of becoming licensed, like, yeah, you're 100% right that the challenges are very real. I think that's where the CPAs like AK Child and Family and Denali Family Services really have something going, which, you know, our licensing specialists are really there to support the homes through that licensing process. We know it's daunting, and so we're really there every step of the way, kind of leading through the process and really trying to, you know, promote success. You know, with that, I guess I'll just say, like, we see ourselves at Denali Family Services really just as a little bit of a guide, and the true heroes of the story are the community members listening to this right now. And so our role is really to help empower them to make a difference in their communities.
And Kim, I see you nodding. So would you suggest that people actually reach out to either AK Child and Family or Denali Family Services instead of OCS if they're interested and want to kind of feel out the ideas for becoming foster families?
Yeah, so if you're interested in becoming a therapeutic treatment home, I would definitely reach out to one of our partner agencies. And if you're interested in just sort of general foster care to see what that's like, you know, you can reach out to OCS. You can also reach out to Alaska Center for Resource Families. But what I wanted to say is we also partner with our tribal partners, and we have several tribal partners across the state who license foster homes on behalf of OCS. So AVCP, Kowarik,
and AVCP is Alaska Village Council Presidents.
Presidents, yes, out in the Western region, yes. Bethel. So all of our tribal partners are working with us to help us license foster homes so that we can get young people in their communities with relatives or with at least members of their tribe if it's not a biological relative. So there are a variety of ways that we can provide that support. And a few changes at OCS recently is we've centralized a special needs hotline. So if you need a bunk bed because you don't have enough beds, we have a hotline that you can call and we can kind of assess your need for that.
And can people help out with things like that?
Oh, actually, there's a wonderful new thing that started here in Anchorage and Valley area. It's called the Care Portal. And that's exactly what the care Portal does, that community members can log on, see a need in real time, and contribute something or contribute to a need, an actual concrete support available. And that's run through Beacon Hills. So we just have a variety of different ways that people can step into this. But we have a placement search and support unit as well. If you need a piece of paperwork and you can't reach your caseworker, you can contact Placement Search and Support and they will get that piece of paperwork for you, right? So we're trying to streamline support. And our licensing team is also shifting into walking people through the application instead of just providing it and hoping it comes back complete. Hand walk them through, and if there's variances, let's say for the size of your home or your windows or that are needed, they can help walk you through that paperwork as well.
All right, we're going to take one call in our final few minutes here. Eleanor is in Manicotic. Hello, Eleanor.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. According to the Universal Emergencies Framework, that the ACS is in violation of our Universal Human Rights of the Geneva Convention, and I don't know if I'm asking, not appreciate those the child trafficking and destruction of families.
Eleanor, so we're having a really hard time hearing you. I'm so sorry, Eleanor. I wish we could. It sounded like you had a very important question to ask, but for some reason the line is just not good and we could not understand you, and I'm sorry about that. If you want, you could send us a quick email to talk@alaskapublic.org, and I'll try to get it in before we close out today. But, Kim, I did want to ask about ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act, mandates that an Alaska Native child should go to family before outside placement. It's a pretty stringent requirement, family first, then people in that community. Should ICWA rules be replicated for other foster care to try to place more kids with family? Would that be helpful?
Yeah, actually, there is some alignment in federal and state law about placing with family first. And so while it's not as specific as ICWA is for Alaska Native and American Indian families, those laws do exist. We do have a requirement to do a diligent relative search at the beginning of any case that we have with a family to ensure that we've identified relatives and that we are reaching out to relatives. And so I think the message I'd like for folks to know is that if you're a relative and you have a relative in care, you know, you need to be considered for placement. And so we'd be happy to work with you to see what kind of supports we could do to help with that placement with a relative. It does require some background checks and other things, and so sometimes those can be barriers for placement. But if we can place with a family, get the right kind of support wrapped around them to meet the needs of that child, that is ideally what we want for every child, but especially for our Native community.
We only have a couple of minutes left here. Dan, you run a summer program for children in therapeutic care. What does that involve?
Yeah, well, it's hard to encapsulate because it's so many things. But essentially, it's a program that we offer 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, for the entire day. And engaging youth of all age groups, really, in a wide variety of different activities, with a primary focus on supporting engagement and with staff that are, you know, highly trained to support the behavioral health needs of our participants. So that could look like anything from, you know, arts and crafts activities, team building activities, all the way to, in some cases, you know, multi-day backpacking trips, overnight summer camps, kayaking on local lakes. So just a wide variety of different activities, where we're really able to kind of support that engagement for youth that maybe otherwise had their challenges, whether it's behavioral challenges or social-emotional challenges, might prevent them from really engaging in those ways.
Mm-hmm. And just as we close out here, for all of you, talk about how you work, if you can condense this a bit, to help young people in foster care feel that they have some autonomy and authority over their life, especially as they get older, because they've been in a system where they have little or no control about where they're going next or who they're going to live with. How difficult is that for an 18-year-old who ages out of foster care but hasn't yet developed skills of running your own life? Nathan?
Well, that's kind of the whole point of therapeutic foster care, is to get them those skills before they do age out. And that can be challenging, but, part of it is just learning how to re-engage in your community, whether it be your workplace, your friends, foster or adoptive parents, bio parents that you're reconnecting with and healing through your trauma with, all that stuff.
Kim, your final thoughts here in just a few seconds.
I would say that one of our goals is to have youth voice at the table at all times. And I think it's really beneficial when we have a therapeutic community that is able to support the youth in that process. And then we have advocacy groups that are really fantastic at helping with this through our independent living program and Facing Foster Care in Alaska. And so having lived experience at the table is vital. So whatever we can do to support that, we will.
And Dan, make a quick pitch for the Love Foster Care is Love campaign.
Yeah, just throughout, you know, one thing I haven't mentioned is that not only do we need full-time foster parents, but there is such a thing as part-time foster parents who just help out for a night or two at a time. And so if you're interested in getting more information, definitely check out our campaign's website at fostercarealaska.org.
Thank you so much to my guest today, Kim Swisher, Deputy Director of the State Office of Children's Services, Dan Bigley, the CEO of Denali Family Services, and Nathan Dieter, the Licensing Supervisor for AKA Child and Family. Thanks to our engineer today, Tobin Shelby. Our producer was Annie Feit. And on the phones, Wesley Early helped us out. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Shumigan Corporation. Located in Sand Point, the Schumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sand Point Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Schumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sand Point, on the web at www.schumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Schumigan Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sand Point, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay,